On the show today, double takes. People compelling us to take a look at something we think we understand.
Ralph Ellison, who wrote The Invisible Man, sums it up quite nicely. I think he says, sometimes invisibility is a refusal to see. It's not that the information is not there. It's more about training ourselves to be conscious of the things that we're not necessarily paying attention to.
This is artist Tavares Strawn, and he was first introduced to this idea when he was a child growing up in the Bahamas.
We have a big family. There's over 60-plus grandkids.
60-plus?
Yep. My grandmother and grandfather had 13 kids, so when we were all together, it was a big group of people.
When he was around 10 years old, his grandfather came home with a set of encyclopedias.
And it was a big deal, as you would imagine, because all of a sudden, all these little kids had access to all this knowledge. So imagine the pomp and circumstance of having these encyclopedias arrive at the house. And I remember first looking at them thinking, how absurd is this process of collecting this much information and trying to share it with the general population?
That's what went through your mind as a kid?
I thought it was very odd. I thought there was a certain level of hubris in the process. And I realized that immediately they weren't the kind of stories that reflected the environment that we were in.
Mm-hmm.
So I know more about Napoleon and Christopher Columbus than I do about, for example, you know, the River Nile or Marcus Garvey or any kind of African origin. And at the time, I think the population of the Bahamas was probably 90% black. And so all we were being fed was material that was being scripted for a primarily European audience. And so I think the question always was, where are we? Who are the people who are in this community? Are we located anywhere else and represented anywhere else?
I mean, that's incredibly astute for a young kid. I think I probably would have thought, like, whoa, I can hold the world's knowledge between my two hands. But that is not what you thought.
You know, I feel like that level of skepticism, healthy skepticism, that is, was what pushed me towards the arts in the first place.
As an adult, Tavares took that skepticism to art school in the U.S. He also started traveling the globe searching for lost stories.
And trying to understand what a society does with all the information that is not recorded in not a part of the zeitgeist, if you will.
And as a grad student, he came across a name he'd never heard before. Matthew Henson.
Matthew Henson was one of, or if not the first, to make it to the North Pole, and he traveled in 1909 with Robert Perry.
I had never heard of Matthew Henson, and I'm guessing that most people listening also have not heard of Matthew Henson. Can you tell us about him?
Yeah, Matthew Henson, he worked as a deckhand with Admiral Perry for many, many years. As a teenager, traveled throughout Central and South America. Admiral Robert Perry was an explorer himself in his own right. And they just spent so many years together. And then the race to the poles began. And for context, this race was like going to space, making it to the North Pole back in 1909. So this was a big deal, if you know what I mean. And I think one of the things that really turned the tide was Henson became one of the more trusted explorers on the team, if you will.
Mm.
His mushing skills, his navigational skills, his ability to withstand the freezing temperatures, all those things mixed together. And also his kind of social prowess, his ability to navigate the indigenous folks that he was interacting with. And in 1909, they made a trek to the pole and successfully arrived at the pole. And this was a big deal. And for the most part, Henson's story was more or less left as a kind of shadow to the main story of Perry.
Now, this son of a sharecropper had managed over 7 Arctic expeditions, yet his massive, massive contributions became lost to history. And I ain't really cool with that.
Here's Tavares Strawn on the TED stage.
So years later, I decided to make my own encyclopedia. It's called the Encyclopedia of Invisibility. This is a 3,000-page, leather-bound book that has over 17,000 entries. Now, the first entry that I wrote was on, you guys may have guessed it, the explorer Matthew Henson. From there, I thought, who and what else should be included in these pages? I would make list after list of things that were excluded from history and research them. At first, it was just me alone. Then I needed an assistant, and then I needed an entire team. And together, we would comb the globe looking for people, places, and things that were mostly untold. So let's look at this entry on Robert Smalls. Now, the great Robert Smalls freed himself from slavery, overtook a bunch of Confederate ships, freed a whole bunch of slaves from those ships, and then majestically marched on to become one of the first Black congressmen in the United States. Then there's an entry on rhinoceros. Did any of you know there was a woolly rhinoceros? No? Then there's an entry on Sister Rosetta Tharpe. Sister Rosetta Tharpe is the mother of all rock and roll. Then there's an entry on the great John Edmonston, the man that taught a very young Charles Darwin the art of taxidermy and a whole lot more. Now, after 12 years, a limited edition of this encyclopedia was published as an artwork, occupying these territories between sculpture, book, and installation. And this experience truly convinced me that there are an infinite amount of lost stories to be told.
The encyclopedia is a very large, it's black to blue leather with gold accoutrement and gilding. And it's very much channeling this like 17th century notion of the book. And I'm really playing with that, using that language of authority, of knowledge. And these entries kind of feel very similar to what you would visually look at in a traditional encyclopedia, except they include the kinds of things that you might not learn at school.
When we come back, the missing story that Tavares Strawn found while training as a cosmonaut in Russia. On the show today, Double Takes. I'm Manoush Zomorodi, and you're listening to the TED Radio Hour from NPR. We'll be right back. It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Manoush Zomorodi. On the show today, Double Takes. What happens when we take a second look? We were just talking to artist Tavares Strawn, creator of the 3,000-page Encyclopedia of Invisibility. This is a book full of forgotten stories that he believes deserve their place in the history books. There's another entry that I would love you to tell us about, Robert Henry Lawrence. How did you find out about him?
I think I'd just come back from space training in Star City, Russia.
I'm sorry, you can't just start a sentence like that. What? Rewind.
Yeah, so when I'd come back from the Arctic, on one of my first expeditions, I started to think about space. And in a parallel way, I wanted to get the kids in my neighborhood to think about exploration. And so one of the things that I was thinking about was, how do I do that? And one of the ways to do it is to go train to be an astronaut, or depending on where you are, a cosmonaut. And so I spent many, many months over a couple of years doing this training.
Wow.
Back and forth to Russia. And then the story of Robert Henry Lawrence started to emerge as the first kind of Black astronaut who was supposed to go to space and then wasn't able to make it because he had died in a training exercise when the plane that he was on exploded.
Had you heard that story previously?
I hadn't, no. I think I learned about Robert Lawrence from one of the astronauts, actually, that I was working with in Russia.
So you added Robert Lawrence to the encyclopedia, but you also created an unusual piece of art.
Yeah, I think the big question in my head was, seriously, is there a way to get this guy who died so tragically into space?
So step one was to find someone with a rocket. And who has rockets? The head of SpaceX, Gwynne Shotwell. And then I had to figure out who was going to be as interested in these lost stories as I was. The head of SpaceX, Gwynne Shotwell. We were introduced by the LA County Museum And after 4 years of rigorous testing, planning, and sculpting, a satellite was produced in honor of Robert. Now, this satellite was made of gold, and it was important for me to have this satellite follow an ancient Egyptian tradition of storytelling by imbuing the essence of a person into a container. Now, this satellite was called Enoch, after the story of a mythological character whose walk with the gods was so close that he never, ever died. On November 30, 2018, Enoch blasted into space in the belly of a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket into orbit. Almost 50 years after his passing, the legacy of Robert Henry Lawrence is celebrated amongst the stars.
So SpaceX is, of course, owned by Elon Musk, who was working with the Trump administration to roll back numerous DEI initiatives. And, for example, the Pentagon also is removing names of Black, gay, and Native American veterans from various places. And I guess, you know, it's confusing. We finally got to a point where, as a society, we've started to acknowledge that there are many stories that had not been told, and we are taking another look and bringing them to light in some places, obviously not all. And now it feels, though, at least in the United States, that we're not going to be adding to those stories. In fact, we might be taking them away. What are your thoughts on that?
Where I go with that immediately is I think about what's the purpose of art and artists. And I think what artists are really, really good at is they're really good at systems and thinking about systems. You know, if you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, once we've achieved food, water, and shelter, I think there's art, right? And I think it is the thing that will save us. Obviously, I'm biased, but I think it's the thing that will save us. And so where I'm going with all of this is there has been a long, long history of artists interrogating systems. Mm. I'm a part of that tradition, and that tradition will never stop. So I feel very much empowered as an artist more today than I was yesterday, because if the question is, what do we do next? I think the answer is we continue to support artists in the work that they're doing to interrogate these systems to bring about change.
What are you working on next? I'm a little trepidatious to ask, really. Are you launching yourself somewhere, or tell me what you're thinking about?
The thing that I'm working on now is an exhibition entitled The Day Tomorrow Began. It's an immersive work that features a kind of several dialogues regarding the idea of the hero, how societies create heroes, and the monument that we leave behind.
It seems like you are someone who is a believer in heroes, maybe unsung heroes, as they're called.
I think that there's a deep level of complexity with the idea of a hero, because I think a hero denotes a certain level of expectation of perfection. And I think what we're learning is what happens when our heroes are not perfect. What do we do? How do we think about that? Right. And I'm really interested in that.
I'm trying to square that with the idea of Henson and Lawrence and turning them into famous figures, mm-hmm. as they should have been, to kids. And is that not part of what you're doing, is raising these people up who were left behind, whose stories weren't told, giving them sort of heroic status for kids so that they have something to aspire to?
One of the most powerful things about criticism is the critic has to be careful not to become the thing that they're criticizing. And I think being an artist is always a little bit of a dangerous game of understanding the balance of the kind of the curiosity or the problem that you're trying to solve, and kind of reconciling that with the reality, right?
Yeah.
So a good example of that is the first successful and only slave revolution in this hemisphere was the one in Haiti. And King Henry Christophe, who I love in particular, was a part of the movement that basically eradicated France from Haiti. Mm. But one of the things that he did as a convention of his scenario as an ex-slave who became a leader was he became king, right? So this guy who's a hero of mine, in a way, recreated the problem to some degree that he was eradicating. And I'm interested in that. I think that's fascinating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I accept that as a part of the story also. And I think there's a certain colonial quality to the way that we've told stories over the past 100 years that I think doesn't allow for that layer of complexity. We want to tell the black and white story, and most stories are just not that way. And so how do we captivate an audience with a story by still being reflective of the future of storytelling, which I think is about being able to make space for the complexity of this person who got rid of Napoleon's army in Haiti and made this place free, and actually not just that, inspired the freedom of the folks in the Americas. Like, this is a big deal.
Mm.
So to have someone who is this central figure, you look at him close and you're like, wait a minute, why would you want to be a king when we just got rid of the king, is something that I think we all should take a look at.
So this episode that we're including our conversation in, we're calling it Double Takes, thinking that you know something and then realizing when you look again that you know nothing. Am I accurate in thinking that that's what you're doing? You're asking people to look again, reconsider their preconceived ideas.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's oftentimes shocking that these stories that are sitting in plain sight just elude so many of us. And I think the notion of being an artist is synonymous with critical thinking. You couldn't be an artist without being able to think critically. The most important skill as we move into the future with technology and AI is for humans to be able to process critically what they're seeing, how they're seeing it, and why they're seeing it. So the level of skepticism that I expressed to you at the beginning of this conversation when I was a kid, I still have today, but I now just call it critical thinking. Artists are trained to investigate things at a very, very high level, and I think that is a very important skill to the future of human survival.
That's artist Tavares Strawn. You can see his full talk at TED.com.